Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Being Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. We are here at the beautiful Meridian Hotel in Arlington, Virginia, with Shoshana Grove, Vice President of Executive Women in Government. She is our featured leader for the March issue of Be Incandescent magazine, our Women in Power issue. Hello, Shoshana. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Hope. Great to be here today.
So first, before we launch into our Q&A, a little bit about this truly amazing woman. A federal executive who began her career as a letter carrier in D.C., she worked her way up through the postal ranks and is currently the head of the Office of Secretary and Administration for the Postal Regulatory Commission. There, she's responsible for maintaining the records of the commission, preserving commission documents, managing the commission's library and docket room, and managing HR, among a zillion other responsibilities. She also represents the commission on the Federal CIO Council and Small Agency Council. She's on the Task Force for Blue Collar Women in Government, and she was recently elected the chair of Women in Logistics and Delivery Services. So we are not at a loss for what to talk about when it came time, now that we're here sitting down with this truly amazing woman. So excuse any ambient noise, because we're here having a nice little chat in front of a fire on a beautiful Sunday afternoon in D.C. So let's start talking about Executive Women in Government. Shoshana, tell us about this organization, who are its members, and what is its mission?
Thank you, Hope. Executive Women Government was founded in 1974, and we're an organization of very senior executive women who serve in the legislative, executive, and judicial branches of the federal government. We advocate for the advancement of women in senior leadership positions, and provide our members an opportunity to be better acquainted with each other, with their colleagues, and to take action in public service alongside other women. Currently, Hope, only 30% of senior executive service jobs are held by women. And this is in spite of the fact that women comprise over half of the federal workforce. So this is something that is a strong focus for us. In Congress, only 19% of Congress is comprised of women, and that's up from 17% last year. So on another very grassroots level, we are advocating for more representation by women in Congress. Executive Women in Government is also committed to seeing more women on corporate boards. To give you an example, in 2011, women occupied just shy of 17% of Fortune 500 corporate boards seats. And this is even though survey data from the Catalyst Group shows that corporate boards that have a higher representation of women actually do better in performance and financial measurements than corporate boards that do not. So we have a goal there of getting the word out and also being very activist in both the public and private sector toward increasing the roles of women, which we think can only benefit both government and the private sector. Executive Women in Government works closely with top private sector women executives, understanding that perspective and power influence change, and that some cooperative relationships bring growth, as I say, in both areas.
So tell us how you got involved with this really interesting group that's trying to impact change at such a high level.
Well, the way I got involved, I think, is the way most great opportunities arise and come to us, and that was through volunteering and networking. A few years ago, a fellow executive who I knew both through my work and through my work with the Women in Logistics and Delivery Services approached me to ask me to be a mentor and part of the mentoring program for the Executive Women in Government. I became an active participant. It was a fabulous experience. And then this past year, the nominating committee approached me to be vice president of the organization.
So. That's really exciting. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing as vice president and what some of your initiatives are for the year to come. What are some of the big changes that you guys are trying to make?
Well, in taking over at Executive Women in Government, there were a lot of governance and infrastructure issues that we wanted to address just to get the organization onto a very sound financial and administrative footing, and that is something that we did. It took us quite a bit of time. We're fixing up our website, our membership database, our bookkeeping, and now that we've gotten that out of the way, we're focusing on some really fantastic upcoming events. We had an inside government. We're having inside government events where we're going to the various federal agencies and having top women speak to other women about what's happening in their agencies, which is very well received and people love it. We have a wine tasting with on Capitol Hill with one of our big private sector with public and private sector partners. We have a etiquette luncheon coming up. Excuse me, I think etiquette and protocol, which would be business etiquette and protocol. And it's by the Washington Protocol School. So these are some of the top, people that teach diplomats and others in the Foreign Service how to be diplomatic and have the proper protocol. So we think that's going to be a great luncheon for our members. And we have our big event coming up in May at the National Chamber of Commerce, which is our annual leadership summit. And look out for that because we have a power-packed agenda of speakers for that event.
Excellent. And for some of these events, we're looking forward to maybe helping give you some of our incandescent speakers to come in and speak, talking about exciting things that are happening in the not in the private sector. So tell us, you're the VP of Executive Women in Government. You are on the task force on blue-collar women in government. You're the new chair of Women in Logistics and Delivery Services, and you have a full-time job and a husband. So tell us how you balance it all out and manage to stay sane with all these exciting things that you're doing.
It's very funny you should ask that, and I'm going to start with your last question, I guess, and I'm always reminded of that rather famous Lucille Ball quote, if you need something done, give it to a busy person, or we like to say give it to a busy woman, meaning the more you do, the more you can do. And I find one of the most rewarding things I find working in organizations such as Women in Logistics and Delivery Services, WILDS, and Executive Women in Government, where I have the opportunity to volunteer and work closely with some of the very top women in my field and in government, is that the busier these women are, the more they seem to be able to get done. And it seems to be, to me, to be a quality of leadership. And so I guess that would be my answer to that question. It seems like the more we do, the more time we seem to find in our day. I don't know how that happens, but it seems to happen. And I am now forgetting the first part of the question, which had to do with women in logistics and delivery services, correct? So I guess the first time I heard about Women in Logistics and Delivery Services, I was at an event at the National Postal Forum, which is kind of the big annual event for the Postal Service where I was working at the time. And I heard about this group called WILDS, which I knew was kind of a small rogue women's group, not really very well organized and nothing very official. And I was intrigued by it, and I met some of the women there. And I thought, you know, this is very cool. It is something that I want to be involved in. So later I joined as a member. I became part of the Mentor Protégé program, and I actually was a protégé. I was assigned to one of the very top women in the Postal Service where I worked then, and she became a dear, dear friend and mentor. She was on the board of Wilds, and she got me more involved, introduced me to my current boss, another woman who I greatly, greatly admire. And then I just started volunteering. I wrote a magazine article for about the organization that was published in one of the industry trade magazines. I got involved in organizing a lot of events. I did every type of volunteer work I could for the organization because I really believed in it. And ultimately, they put me on the board, and then just this past year, I was named to chair the board.
Wow. Well, it seems like you have been, since the beginning of your career, a real fireball. So you started off as a letter carrier, and you mentioned to me that you were 18 when you started doing this and that you were just about to go to college. So what got you interested in becoming a letter carrier? What was that experience like? And then how has your career path evolved since then?
Well, it was a very different time back then. And being a letter carrier was a very non-traditional job for women. I think that's one of the reasons why I have such an interest, for instance, in the task force on women in blue-collar jobs. I think blue-collar jobs can be a way for women to earn a really good salary to support a family, and as opposed to a lot of the jobs, entry-level jobs that women tend to go in, such as shop clerk, other service-type industry jobs. At that time, as I say, I was not really looking to embark on a career, but I wanted to make some money. I was about to go to college, and I learned from a friend of mine that they were hiring at the post office just a few blocks from my house, and I went down and applied for the position, and they hired me at that time as a temporary, and I found myself to be one of only two women. There were two of us who started that day in an all completely male work. It was all men letter carriers where I worked. And the job was extremely, extremely physically grueling and physically taxing. And also mentally and emotionally, it was draining just in a lot of ways. The work environment, the work itself, everything about it. And I think that it was very character building for me to learn ultimately to overcome the challenge of the job, to actually become good at it. And I had a fond feelings for it. I actually enjoyed something about the task-oriented nature and the physicality and even just the working class nature of the job. So later, after graduating from college and doing a few other things, I thought, you know, well, much like the Postal Service, much like the military, is one of the few organizations where people, the top leaders, actually do tend to work their way up from the bottom. And I felt that I could go in again at, you know, that kind of bottom blue-collar rung, and work my way up very quickly into the ranks of top leadership, given my background, education, etc. It took me much longer to get up to that top echelon than I thought it would, but the entire experience, every year of it, was a growth experience, a learning experience, and an eye-opener for me. And I think along the way that I was able to do a lot of good for a lot of people, women and others, who came up behind me because of the skills and a certain humanitarianism that I was able to bring to my roles in leadership that was not necessarily part of the postal culture. So
you have had just an amazing amount of experience and seen so many different things. I'm curious, I know that your mom is Faye Moskowitz, who is a professor of English at GW. She actually was the chairman of the department for a long time. She's an amazing author. She was our Truly Amazing Woman in January 2013, where with David Bruce Smith, another author and publisher, they work on Jewish Literature Live. He is one of the sponsors of the program, and they bring famous Jewish authors in to talk to the students at GW. She must have been a huge force in your life. Tell us about your relationship with your mom and how and the impact that she's made on you.
Wow, it's very hard to just know where to start when talking about my mom because she really is the most truly amazing woman. And she has had a profound influence on me. And, you know, I think one of the most important things my mom has taught me is the importance of women mentors. During most of my career, I always had a mentor. It was usually a man, and it was just kind of a great enlightenment to me in my later years to actually have women mentors, and it's been a big eye-opener. When I was growing up, when I was younger, my mom was really a traditional 50s housewife. But even though that being the case, she was not at home all day. She was extremely active in local politics in Detroit, which is where we lived. And she, in those days, women didn't chair the local political party, so my mom was always the co-chair. But she was very active and worked really hard. She was a delegate at two national conventions. And then ultimately, my dad got a job here in Washington, D.C. And as my dad likes to say, in the old days, the women did the work and the men got the job. So my dad fully credits my mom's hard work in grassroots politics as having gotten him his first job here in Washington, D.C. So after she came to Washington, it was, I think, a little harder to get involved in Washington politics. So she did various things. At one time, I remember mom gave guitar lessons. She picked up learned how to play the guitar, and she gave guitar lessons. And actually was the teacher who was, she taught many of the well-known DC cult bands, got their start learning guitar from my mother, as I later found out, meeting people and talking to them. Mentioning my mother's name still invariably will get me a free drink at a bar, or you name it. It happens all the time. She's incredible. She didn't finish college, as you know, until she was in her 40s, and from there started a whole new career as an author, as an acclaimed author, as a speaker on National Public Radio, as an educator, first at the Edmund Burke School here in Washington, where she ran the middle school, and then at George Washington University, where she eventually got tenure, became department chair, and now, as you know, heads Jewish Literature Live. She's also on the Tenure and Promotions Committee for the university. She co-chairs the DC Jewish Literary Fest. She's the poetry editor for Vogue Magazine. She has a huge house that is always immaculate, and she has dinner on the table for my dad every single night. So I don't know how she does it, but I do truly admire her.
You clearly come from good stock, and you have learned well from your mom. And I think we'd be remiss to not talk a little bit about your dad and what he did. So just, even though this is our Women in Power issue here for Be Incandescent Magazine, and you're listening to the Incandescent Radio Network on the Truly Amazing Women show, let's just get a little plug in there for your dad.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned about my dad, and I'm going to just first start with talking about my grandmother, my dad's mother, because in spite of the fact that they fought like cats and dogs while she was alive, there's not a day that goes by now that my dad doesn't remember my grandmother of blessed memory. And my father will proudly say, my grandmother, who was first generation in this country, worked as a custodian in the public schools during the day, and then at night she worked in Saunders Bakery in Detroit, and then she would bring the chocolate cake home, the fresh baked chocolate cake home for my father and his brother to eat for breakfast in the morning. So I think that very hard work comes in our stock. My dad was a lawyer in Detroit, and as I mentioned, he came to work for originally Senator McNamara, and then subsequently worked for Phil Hart. He was on the committee headed up the committee for aging when they passed Medicare reform, and later went on to the Pentagon, where he was head of civil rights and industrial relations, and helped ensure civil rights for our military during the Vietnam War, and also to ensure that companies that contracted with the government were promoting civil rights and in that time contracting and minority contracting and such. He later on went on to help with the co-founding of, with the founding of Common Cause with John Gardner and others. And then he went to work for the United Way of America and worked there for quite some years before he retired to do pro bono work in the DC courts. He's currently, he was one of the original founders of the DC Jewish Center on 16th Street downtown, which has been a fabulous success. He sits on the board of the DC JCC as well as the Theater J. So thank you for asking about my dad.
Very cool. Great, great family. Now let's switch back to women in power. So since you first became professional and clearly working your way up as a letter carrier to make extra money, then graduating from college, and then working your way up through the government, do you think, well, clearly women have made tremendous strides. Have they made the strides that you'd hope them to make? What do you see coming for your daughter, for instance? I know that she's also works in the government. She's in her mid-20s, and you must have great aspirations for her as well. So what are you seeing from your perspective as a very successful woman in power currently, and what do you see coming for women like your daughter, the millennials?
Well, undoubtedly, there have been huge strides for women since what's referred to as the second wave of feminism in the workplace, in reproductive issues and family matters. There have been huge strides, but in spite of the fact, I think we were chatting earlier, that many think that, you know, we're kind of there, I definitely do not think we're there. It can be seen by some of the numbers I mentioned earlier, by the lack of representation, the fact that we needed to pass a bill such as the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act was one of President Obama's first bills to pass into law when he became president. His first term shows that overt and not so overt discrimination still exists for women in the workplace, some of it very subtle. So I think we do have a huge amount of work to do in that area. I don't think we can just rest on that. But I do have tremendous hope for the millennials. It's a completely different generation that has grown up blind to ethnicity, race, gender preference. It's just a whole different group of people that are coming up, young people that are coming up, that it may be 10, 15, 20 years before they come into their full power, but when they do, I think it's going to be just an incredible age for our country and for the world. I just want to have this little quote that I pulled here from a dear friend of mine, Morley Winograd, who was the co-author of the Millennium Momentum. And Morley says, "Millennials have overwhelmingly turned their backs on conventional notions about the place of women in society, making their generation the most gender-neutral, if not female-driven, in U.S. history." And I certainly see that in my daughter. I kind of feel that coming up as a woman, and I think this is a shared experience with many of my women colleagues, that we felt we really had to work a little bit harder than the men to get where we are, a little bit harder and a little bit smarter. And I see my daughter and her generation as being extremely hardworking, focused, goal-oriented. And, you know, I think there's, not to say this, but I think there's a little bit of a Young women tend to mature a little bit earlier, and so you see a lot of these women that are coming out of college and they're already just jump starting their careers. And you know, when I think a lot, sometimes some of the guys are still just maybe figuring out exactly what they want to do. And I would just say that watch out; these women are really going to be doing something in the next couple of decades.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. In fact, Morley Winograd and Mike Hayes were columnists for the magazine. They wrote our Generations column for months and
wonderful.
Months and months. So yes, we love them and their philosophies, and we love these women. From my perspective, truly amazing women. It's a tsunami. It's just, it's going to change everything. Sort of batten down the hatches, hold on to your seats, because the best is yet to come. And speaking of which, what's coming for you? What's on the horizon for you? You're still young and you have plenty of things, I'm sure, that you want to do. Tell us a little bit about what's the future for Shoshana Grove.
Well, honestly, I just absolutely love what I'm doing right now. I have a terrific job. I have the best boss in the whole wide world. And I'm not fibbing about that. And I am very, very engaged with both executive women in government and women in logistics and delivery services. So I think I'll just see where that takes me, because sometimes opportunities just come when you least expect them. So I'm looking forward to maybe I had a 500-mile bike trip not last summer, the summer before, and I'm hoping maybe for that in Canada this summer. And I'm not looking beyond that for now.
Well, that's probably wise for all of us, but we do want people to look forward to your 6 tips for women who want to land top jobs and be successful executives in government. And we're very excited that you and an EB Executive Women in Government's president, Rita Jo Lewis, will be sharing that with us in our next podcast. So we look forward to recording that in the next couple of weeks, and to you guys both being featured in the March issue of Be Incandescent magazine, Women in Power. We can't thank you enough, Shoshana, for taking the time out of your Sunday to come and talk to us at the beautiful Meridian Hotel here in Arlington, Virginia. And we will look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you, Hope. It was wonderful being here today.
So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.